It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I'm doing this so I get the thumbnail.
You win.
You got it this last week, so I didn't. I'm.
Oh.
Reasserting. I have a new hobby.
Yeah? What is it?
Yeah. Well, I didn't intend for it to be a new hobby. I thought it was a one-off. But now I've done it more than once, so it's a hobby. Uh-oh. My new hobby is almost burning down places.
Oh. Well, I mean, you know, everybody has to have a little something.
I actually burned dinner last night, too, but not in a way that threatened to burn down the house. I just...
Uh-oh. So that wasn't the third time.
No, I wasn't. No, not yet. Not yet. Although now that it's my hobby, maybe, you know. So we went away this last weekend to Minneapolis to visit family and to see Kumail Nanjiani do some stand-up. And on the way there, we stopped by a Casey's gas station to get some gas. This is normal. This is a thing we do. We particularly stop at the Casey's because we get, through our grocery store, gas scents to use at Casey's. You can use them at Hy-Vee Gas or Casey's. So we use a lot of Casey's. So whatever. Putting the gas in, I'm like, I'm going to go get a drink and a snack. Do you want anything? My wife says no. She stays in the car. So the gas is pumping. I go inside. I also have to pee because I always have to pee. But there's somebody already in the bathroom.
Mm.
They proceed to take comfortably 3.5 hours in there. and then come out and don't appear. Like, the seat's up. So, like, my thought is they were doing drugs. But whatever. Anyway, they finally get out. I waited for a long time. And they finally get out. And I go do my business. And then I go buy some snacks. I'm gone a while. And I get back out there. And Trish is practically falling asleep. Whatever. I get back in the car. Turn it on. Start driving. Ka-dunk, ka-dunk.
You left the...
I did.
Oh, no.
The thing in there. Now, and some of you out there are saying, well, I'm an experienced driver. I've accidentally done this before. Many people have. It's extremely common. And all that happens is it's built for this to disconnect the hose. Easy peasy, no leaking gas. It's a great safety mechanism.
Oh.
If it works.
Oh.
That's not what happened on this one.
What happened?
The hose literally ripped.
Oh,
in
no.
Multiple places. The paneling came off, and most salient, it is spraying gasoline. Just everywhere.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And Trish and I are like, fuck. So we're both out of the car, running around. Where's the emergency shutoff? Every gas station has an emergency shutoff. They have to by law. There's usually an inside one, an outside one, and they're these giant fucking red buttons. Often with a little like case over it so you don't accidentally hit it. It says emergency shutoff. We can't find it. Trish is going around the back. I go inside. I run in. I say to the cashier, very cheerful lady who just rung me out earlier, I say, you got to hit the emergency shutoff for the gas. And she, with a smile on her face, with a very cheerful smile on her face, says, great. How do I do that?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And I paused for a second because I was not expecting a response.
Yeah.
Even in the ballpark.
Yeah, right.
Of that.
Right.
And admittedly, I might have gotten a little snippy at this point. And I said, I don't know, but legally there has to be a shutoff for the gas pumps. I just pulled out a hose and it is spraying gas everywhere. She says, let me go get my boss.
Oh.
And she did go get her boss, and her boss knew where the shutoff was. It's only one inside. And it was like behind shit. She had to like move shit out of the way to hit it. So she turns it off and she's telling the other cashier, she's like, now we got to put bags on all the other pumps because it only shuts off everything. And I'm feeling awful. And I'm just like, sorry, I've literally never done this before. I can't believe this happened. She's like, it'll be fine. I'll just reconnect it fine. We go back out there, look at me, and she's like, oh, no, that it didn't unhook like it's supposed to. And we're like, nope, it was just sprayed out of the panel. So she's like, oh, yeah. I think I'm going to have to call somebody, get this fixed. And she's like, well, thanks for letting us know. And I'm like, what? Like, this is my, do I at least need to like pay for the gas I spilled? Like, and she's like, oh no. She's like, oh, is your car okay? Did you need to file a report?
Oh.
And I was like, our car's fine. I have handicapped the entire gas station for an unspecified amount of time. And you're just like, see ya? And she's like, oh yeah, this happens all the time. It's fine. Really, don't worry about it. And so we left. I wanted to save. There was a little spiral of rubber and like radial stuff that had come out of the middle of the, and I wanted to save that, but Trish wouldn't let me because she's like, it'll smell like gas. And I was like, everything smells like gas. And it did for like an hour afterwards. It just smelled like gasoline.
Wow.
Yeah, so big dummy. This is apparently quite common because now they encourage you, you know, you go inside to get a drink or something while your car is filling up. And so it is not at all uncommon for this to happen, which is why there are mechanisms built in to make it relatively safe and inexpensive. And the one time ever that I've done this, and I managed to just fuck up the whole thing. Although I did later hear from a different gas station attendant of a time that someone brought her the nozzle and hose from a gas pump that they had found a mile and a half away that apparently had come out of a semi.
Oh, no.
That had forgotten. And I was like, how did he know it was yours? She's like, well, I was the closest gas station at the time. But it was mine. So.
Wow.
Freaked us out pretty hard.
No, yeah.
It's the kind of thing I have only seen in movies. Like, the gas pump is just spraying gas out. I'm like, oh, my God.
Ah, that sounds really scary.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that no one knows when it started.
Now, look.
Yes?
Why does the first entry in the blog say March 6th? Why? I don't understand. Does it say
6th?
Yeah, it says March 6th. I'll look at it right now. I'll go clear down and click on the March, you know, you can, whatever. The very first entry says March 6th, 2011, and our first episode is posted. Why does it say that?
No, because neither of us think it was that long ago. So behind the curtain here, people, on Tuesday, the 11th. When was the 11th? It's the 14th now.
Three days ago, whatever.
Yeah, three days ago. For I us. Text William and I say happy 14th podcast anniversary. And he's just the
Yeah, but do you always do that? Have you ever done that before on the 11th?
I don't think I've ever done that before.
Okay.
He said, what the fuck are you talking about, you asshole? That's what it says in the text.
No, it doesn't
say that. And I said, our first episode was on March 11th, 2011. So today is the literal calendar 14th anniversary of our podcast. And then William wrote a bunch of stuff. I didn't really read much of it.
First,
it's
you
a
said,
whole bunch. Apparently, I'm a big liar, is the takeaway from it.
But you were saying that we recorded it not on the 17th, not on a Thursday.
Well, I thought it was a Thursday, but I thought it was the 11th.
No.
But you told me that that's not a Thursday.
Nope. Neither is the
6th.
And
also, you said some other things that implied it also couldn't be that day for other
reasons. The site says the 6th, and you said the 11th, and neither of those is a Thursday. What was on a Thursday in 2011 was St. Patrick's Day, which in my head has... I was at your house on St. Patrick's Day and we recorded it. That's for some reason that's so when I remember.
When's episode 2?
On the site it is the 24th, which is what you would expect. That was a Thursday. That was
But it's multiple weeks away from the first one. But if you go back 1 week from it, it's the 17th.
Right.
Yeah, so it must have been the 17th.
Yeah, but how could the, I mean, if you go into this post that says March 6th, that's where our first episode is.
Yeah.
Well, when did
I'm
we?
I'm betting that the dating is wrong. I'm betting that somewhere in all of the crap, something got messed up with that. I mean, the site's been hosed many times, so.
Oh. Okay. Well.
But in any event, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 731, and we've been doing this for 14 years now, a little over now, 14
we
by the time
you watch. We don't even know
this.
What to... Well, technically, no, because today's the 14th. Oh, by the time they watch it, yes. But for us right now, 14 years won't hit until Monday.
Right. But I...
But yes.
Do you not remember us meeting, like me being at your house on St. Patrick's Day? I could have sworn.
No. I remember you being at my house, and I remember us recording, and I remember discussing that St. Patrick's Day was coming up.
Oh, so we didn't have the every Thursday thing going right away.
No, I think we did. Sorry. You're operating under a misapprehension. These are my memories. At this point, I am confident they are not accurate.
Oh.
Sorry. No, this is what I remember. This isn't, it is looking like this is not what happened.
Hmm.
As far as I know, we always did Thursdays forever and ever, ever and ever. And I think what you're seeing on the website is some sort of technical hiccup, especially since the very next one is within the right cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I don't know.
If you're just joining us for the first time, you know as well as we do about when we started. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like to write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with notes, comments, topics, questions, stuff. The hat magically forwards us the emails, and then we read them and talk about them, except when we don't. How's your week been?
Okay, no gasoline or anything like that, but the kids,
Andy.
The grant, we said we, okay, so the kids were having some kind of a holiday party for their work or something, and they wanted us to watch the kids overnight, so we did that.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. The cool. The grandkids, I mean, grandkids. So my granddaughter's doing this odd thing. So, you know, sometimes kids call, little kids call their grandparents, like, they can't pronounce grandma or grandpa or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You call them something else.
My version was grandpa and grandpa. I couldn't get grandma for some reason. In with my in-laws, it's Grammy and Humpa. That's what they called grandpa. He's Humpa. So now they're all old, but it's still Grammy and Humpa.
Okay, well. So we're called grandma and grandpa, and the kids, you know, there was a time where they didn't seem to be able to say grandpa. So it was just grandma and grandma or whatever, you know, but but whatever the kids call us, nobody else, like, I don't think any nickname is going to stick, because nobody else, you know, we're still called grandma and grandpa no matter what the kids say. But mostly they've gotten close anyhow. It's not really been any dramatic difference. And I think they can both say grandma and grandpa now. I'm pretty sure I've heard them both say it. But for whatever reason, Freya is going to be two in May. Sometimes calls me
already. Dang.
Sometimes calls me Pop Pop. Like, I don't know why, and it's not every time.
I'm guessing she's been watching some early season Arrested Development.
Well, she's pretty clever, and you know, sometimes their parents will call them different things, and I think they've caught on that, you know, it's not just Delmer and Freya. Sometimes they call Delmer Bubba, and sometimes they call Freya something else. So, like, I think they get that you can be called different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if they quite get the concept of nicknames exactly, but they have a notion of you can be called different things. And so I think that's what she's doing. I think just sometimes she feels like calling me some nickname. And
you do look awful lot like Jeffrey Tambor.
Well, it doesn't.
From what I could see, most grandparents figure out what name they want and then just start from the beginning, like shoving that in the kid's face.
Oh, sure.
As you would with anyone else you introduce with, and this is their name. So,
I mean, sometimes it sounds like Pa Pa, you know, but sometimes she'll say it so quickly or in such a way that her, you know, her mouth will go together and it'll go Pop Pop or whatever. But it's not every time. And again, it won't stick because her parents are going to call me grandpa, and, you know,
she probably doesn't recognize you.
Well, the thing is, the way we discovered her doing it was Abby has my picture on her phone. And whenever she turns the phone on, my picture's there as a background or whatever. And if Freya is sitting on her lap, she'll go pop, pop like that. So,
and maybe that's just what she calls cell phone.
No, because when we went walking around at Kent Park, you know, she's little, so she walks really slow. And I was walking, and Dumb were walking a little faster. And every once in a while, I'd heard her say, Pop, Pop, stop.
That's the cell phone. She's like, cell phone, knock it off.
And I turned around and she'd have her hand out, and he would go, stop, Pop, Pop, stop. Because she didn't want me walking so far ahead of her. It's like, it was really funny. But, you know,
I'm assuming I haven't met your grandkids, because, you know, I would train them to call you Dairy Queen.
No, it's not, no, something like that.
All right, because I definitely would.
Probably wouldn't work.
I don't know. I'm pretty good at brainwashing small children.
Well, I mean,
I have devices.
They're very willful. They're not prone to do. I mean, they'll copy what you're doing sometimes because they'll be amused by what you're doing and want to do it. But if you want them to do a thing, they're not likely to do it. Oh my gosh, these kids, they're pretty, but they're fun. It was fun to have them, and they're really fun to have around. They're so cute, you know, kids. So. But yeah, that was fun. How was your week?
It was all right.
Besides the gasoline.
We went to Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah, right.
Saw my nephew and had lunch with my brother on the way back. And then 2 days later, he was in Iowa City for work. So we had dinner with him on Tuesday.
Oh, nice.
So it was pretty fun, because normally we get together and we have to catch up on everything. And we did that on Sunday. And then Tuesday we could just like hang out, which was nice. Went and saw Kumail Nanjiani doing stand up.
Yeah, how was it?
Still quite good. Huge swaths of the audience were Grinnell grads.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure there were people in that auditorium I went to college with. I did not spot them, but there were a lot of Grinnellians in there. Yeah, it was good. He's still good at it. He was very nervous up front to make sure that everybody knew that he started as a stand-up, and wasn't like an actor who just decided he could do this.
Yeah.
I was like, I would rather you think I invented COVID than for you to think. But I do need to talk about, it is quite funny. I do need to talk about one thing that is very important that I need to share with the world. And I apologize for stealing his bit, but I think this is too important and I can't stop thinking about it. So at one point, he was discussing a lot of his mental health things, which seems to be a phase, like the second major comedy album a comedian releases is frequently about their mental health journey. It just seems to come up. I don't know. James Acaster had it. Kyle Kinane had it. It's all over the place. But anyway, so he's talking about this, and he's talking about random thoughts that worry him in the middle of the night, and he's been putting them in his phone. And so he's talking about these, and they're very funny. But he has one that he recently came up with, and I can't stop thinking about it. The full spectrum of naturally occurring hair colors and eye colors. White people can have any of them. And literally everyone else just gets one and it's the same one. Everyone in the world is just dark eyes, dark hair, except white people who can have dark eyes, dark hair, but can also have every other option. And nobody else can.
Of course, a mixed person can. You can.
Yes, yes, but.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Does this prove that there's a God and that they're racist? Like, why is that like that? But why, though?
I was just reading that researchers think as early as 3,000 years ago, Europeans also had dark skin and dark eyes and dark hair. This whole thing is super duper duper recent.
Man, we invented a lot of cool hair colors and eye colors to go with it.
Well.
So wait, does this mean we really are a superior race? Is that what's going on? We managed to evolve cooler new hair color and eye color?
But
aren't they all a whole new skin color that comes with a lot of privilege?
But aren't they all regressive traits? Aren't they all regressive?
Oh.
Yeah, I think they are.
Well, then we must have had to inbreed pretty hard. So that's something.
I mean someone should look it up, but I think they are like blonde hair, right? If it's
supposedly blonde... red hair is specifically a thing that tends to come with genetic inbreeding.
So
but how come nobody else gets them? How come it's only the white people? That seems rude.
Well, I think there's like you were saying about red hair, I think that's regressive too. Like that's the most regressive, for example. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like there's a continuum or spectrum where, you know, if you have red hair and green eyes maybe and really pale skin, that is like way off the scale. And then everyone else gets a little bit closer to the norm over here, which is the dark hair, dark eyes, and whatever. And the reason you get all those combinations, you know, is because you're getting closer and closer, but the skin tone stays light, I guess. So it's just a whole spectrum of things, and the skin tone of each person as you get closer and closer to the what's normal, because what he's talking about is normal. We're abnormal by comparison as far as our skin color, eye color, and things like that. But as you get closer, as you go from green eyes to maybe blue gray eyes to, you know, hazel eyes to brown eyes, but the skin tone only gets a little darker, it doesn't get darker at all. Maybe that's why.
But why though?
I mean, researchers have talked about the skin and eye color thing. Well, I guess the hair color thing would go along with it too, being because you know, people lived far enough above the equator that they needed
that they were low on vitamin D, right? And they needed to absorb.
So they needed four new eye colors?
They needed to absorb more. Well, melanin, doesn't melanin affect all of it? Hair color, eye color, everything?
I don't know.
Okay, well, my understanding is yes, it does. And so, you know, people had to be lighter skinned if they wanted to absorb more in of that indirect sunlight in the northern climes.
Yeah.
So the people who had less melanin got more vitamin D, and we had that improved their survival and their health. But melanin is not just in your skin; that affects your eyes and hair too. And so everything changed with it.
Okay.
But when you get rid of the darker melanin, I guess for eye color especially, I've read this. When you get rid of darker melanin in the eyes, there's lots of colors in there besides just like brown. And so all of those colors will come out. Maybe one will dominate versus another. Hair color is the same. Like, you know, even a person that has normally dark hair might have lighter hair in there, but you just don't see it because of all the dark hair. But if the melanin content of the hair goes down, then the other colors will come out. So I think really everybody has all the colors, so to speak. You just don't see them. Actually, right. Another thing that speaks to that is, have you ever heard of, you know, how like how certain colors of fabric against your skin can wash you out or not or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's true for everybody. So
yeah.
So a person with dark complexion, African-American person, might be able to wear a certain color, but another African-American person, even though they look like they have the same amount of melanin or the same shade of dark skin, they can't wear the same shade of pink, for example, because there are other colors in their skin that you can't see until you put a certain swatch of fabric up against it.
I don't have any way to directly get a hold of Kumail, but I will try and get word to him that this isn't a thing and it's very simple and no one should be worrying about it. And it's definitely not funny.
Well, I'm just saying what I've heard and read. I mean, I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
No, I think you're probably right. Which means it's not funny anymore. I started this by presupposing it might be proof of a racist god.
Oh.
I love that your follow-up was, actually, here's how the genetics works, and it's very normal.
I don't.
But yes, William's probably right, and that is interesting, if not even a little bit funny. Saw the gorge!
The what?
The gorge.
What gorge? Oh, that's the show.
The movie.
I thought you meant
the movie called The Gorge.
I thought you meant there's a gorge in Minnesota somewhere, yeah. And I didn't know.
No,
about
there's
it.
An earthquake outside my driveway. There's a big gorge right now.
Oh, you saw it. Oh.
The Apple TV Plus film, The Gorge. Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy and Sigourney Weaver in what appears to be like the exact same part she played in Cabin in the Woods. Like, she's the nicely suited woman who shows up and explains, actually, there's a reason we have to do all this fucked up shit. But yeah, so we watched that. It's on Apple TV Plus, so you can watch it. It's 2 hours and 7 minutes. I think I've mentioned it before. Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy are guarding a gorge to hell, and they're not supposed to talk to each other, but then they do, and they fall in love, and then they fall in the gorge, and hell happens. That's mostly what it is.
Okay, well, is it worth watching or not?
Well, this is a problem. It divided our house quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
Trish was not into it particularly. Enough that, like, as soon as the credits were going, and I was like, what did you think? She went on a tear. Like, that was longer and more angry than I think she expected to be. So some certain things really just tripped her the wrong way. In a movie that only basically has two characters, and one's a boy and one's a girl, and they're both expert snipers, there are occasions when it's a little sexist, a little bit, but not too bad. It didn't really hit me that bad, but, you know, I defer to my wife on that. There's definitely some logistical issues. I don't know. I found it fun. I enjoyed it. Weirdly, I thought Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy had really good chemistry. I kind of bought the romance in a way. And it's a real slow start, but I was really digging it. Weirdly, the third act, which is when most of the action happens, I was kind of just ready for, like, it went on longer than I wanted it to. Sort of once you knew what's happening, you're like, okay, then whatever. It's definitely a Red Notice, but it is probably one of the best Red Notices I've seen, which is a low bar, but I would recommend it with the caveat that it is a Red Notice and it definitely has no impact on the world at all, and your life will be identical if you do or do not see it. But that being said, I was entertained. I had a fun time.
I really don't buy either of those actors as professional snipers for some reason.
Well, she's Lithuanian too and has this heavy accent the whole time.
Does that help? I don't think she's a sniper.
I don't have feelings about Miles Teller. I used to not like him, and now my opinion of him has raised to where I just don't give a shit about him. I do like Anya Taylor-Joy. There's part of me that tries to resist that because she's so, like, popular and considered conventionally attractive. Like, I don't want to be into the famous hot girl, like everybody's into the famous hot girl kind of thing. But I'm like, no, I think she's actually a really good actor. And I've seen her in a few things now that really did something for me. And I thought she did well in this. I think they play off of each other really well in this. But yeah, it's fine.
By the way, I don't know what actor or actress I would buy as a sniper, but I rarely, when any act, it doesn't matter, actor, male or female, doesn't matter, when they play roles that are like military often, I don't see it. Like, it doesn't work.
Also remember that snipers in movies are like hackers in movies, meaning their actions have little to no relation to the actual real version of the same thing. For starters, real life snipers don't hang out by themselves. They have a spotter, and no one in any movie ever fucking has
a spotter. Right. But like police, I often don't buy when when any show that has police in it and whatever actor they put in that role, I can't see it. Doctors,
Bob,
too.
Balaban. Yeah. Actor Bob Balaban I would buy as a sniper.
I don't know. Right.
He was the guy who produced the TV show that they made within the TV show Seinfeld. He shows up in a whole lot of Wes Anderson's things. He's a small, bald man with big ears and glasses.
Doctors are especially hard because it's usually when they say some scientific, medical thing, technical thing, and you're just like, that just doesn't sound like right coming out of that person's mouth. I don't know why, but I have a real hard time with certain types of professions and actors because it's like, nope, I don't buy it. You don't. Mm. And when I saw the preview, I didn't buy either one of these people in their roles, but I hadn't seen it, so I don't know. Maybe they nail it for all I know. I have no idea.
I would say their believability as snipers is about on par with the believability of snipers I've had in other movies, so probably not super believable to you. I did not notice any change in the sniperness in this movie. Versus other movies with sniper idiots, sniperacity within them.
Well, I don't know where I even get an expectation, honestly, right? Like, there must be some thing in my head where, well, this is what a person should look like or sound like. I have no idea where that comes from.
You might be a retired super soldier. But I think you might have a history of all of this.
It's dumb is what it is, but it's how it is. And it takes me out of it. Doctors, policemen and soldiers of various kinds. Usually that's what all it is. Like fire, not firefighters. I've never had
it. I believe that guy.
Yeah. It's never happened with a firefighter, but police, military, people of all kinds, and doctors. I'm like, I just don't believe
this. I feel similar whenever I watch people play video games. The control, for some reason, the video game on the screen, if it's a real video game, and the controller they're using never match up. I don't know why. It's always a thing.
Or when they're playing an instrument. I hate that. I hate when they're playing an instrument. You know they're not really playing it. But like, the hackers is a good example, because most people understand that one, right? Like, at least...
Now?
Yeah. Most people like, oh, that person doesn't... I don't buy that person's a hacker. Well, for me, it yes, that and these other professions too, and I can't explain why. I suppose I can't really explain for a hacker either. It's not like I've known a lot of hackers or have any reason to have an expectation of what a hacker would act like. So I don't know.
I mean, enough people have explained to the world how hacking isn't the way it's looked.
I suppose so.
Also, anyway. I am a member of Anonymous, but I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I'd make a statement disclaimer saying that I wasn't, so that Anonymous wouldn't come after me in case they listen to this podcast. But again, I feel like that can only up our brand. That kind of controversy. So I'll leave it. I am a member of Anonymous. So there. I finished Eternal Strands.
Oh, you finished it. Okay.
Last night. Well, I think so. I've the end credits ran. There's some stuff you can do afterwards that I might go back to, but I was about ready to be done near the end there. Very fun game, though. I put about 45 hours into it. Really liked it. I hope they do more. They built a fairly elaborate world, of which very little of it was in use, so there's a lot of potential for sequels, I suppose. But also, I got a text the other day from an unknown number. You know how you get these texts and they're like, hey, how's it going? And then you're like, who's this? And they're like, oh, no, it's you don't remember me? It must be a different phone. And then they send you some random person's picture off the internet. And
I just got one 7 minutes ago.
Yes. So I like to play with these a lot.
You do?
I do. I used to. I would get very involved. Then they would send a picture and I would reverse Google image search. And be like, oh, it says you do this job. And then they'll never... them not replying is how you know you got them.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times too, but it's like...
I don't do it as much nowadays. I get a little tired of it.
Yeah, I did it maybe twice, and it's like, nah, I'm just going to block them from now on. That's not that fun.
But the other day, I get a text from an unknown number that just says, pick me up at 5 p.m. tomorrow. And I'm like, what? And then for the record, I wasn't planning to pick anyone up. Not a familiar number, not a familiar area code. And I'm like, whatever, and I leave it. But I'm sitting there, and I don't know, I got this bug up my butt about it. And so I ended up sending a reply, two replies technically. So, says, pick me up at 5 p.m. tomorrow. Again, unknown number, no other information. And I reply, no, Brenda, I'm leaving you. I told you if you didn't get help for your gift card addiction, we were through. I found the receipts, Brenda. And then as a second text, I said, I've taken the boys and we'll be staying at Mother's.
That was it? They didn't say anything?
And I have received no response.
That's a good one. I like that. That's a real good one.
That's all I got. Unless you got something else, I suggest we go to email.
The one I just got said, asked me if we knew each other, said their name, and asked me for my name. I just blocked them.
I don't even ever do that. I just don't reply.
Well, Yeah, there were a couple times where I would get like you, I would engage and then they'd send a picture and I'd look it up really quick. Oh, you mean you have six jobs.
Second, I was like, this one could be real.
Oh, okay.
But then I was like, this will be way funnier if it is. Like, I'll still send that. And in response, if it's my friend, they would be like, I don't know what that is, but my name's such. Like it'll be fine and we'll have a great story. That was what finally tipped the balance into me doing it. Because I'm like, if this really is somebody I know, it's going to be fine.
Okay, so you want me to read an email?
If you can.
This is from Craig.
Craig.
I'm finally watching Ted Lasso, and while I know the final season is considered the weakest of the three, I'm greatly enjoying. Any recommendations for other shows with a similar uplifting vibe? Well, I mean, we've talked about like The Good Place, I think it was
probably The Good Place is a great example of this.
Yeah.
Also Reservation Dogs. It's not entirely uplifting because it deals with some pretty serious shit there, but it is a very positive, very I feel very similarly to it as I feel about Ted Lasso. It actually had an impact on my life in a way that is very important to me. Much less impactful, but also still perfectly good, and also by Mike Schur, who did The Good Place and Ted Lasso and all that stuff. A Man on the Inside. It's a recent Netflix thing that we watched with Ted Danson. It's fun, and it's sweet, and it's uplifting. It's not... Reservation Dogs, The Good Place, and Ted Lasso, to me, are the best television shows that exist. Man on the Inside is not at that level. But it's good. If it has more seasons, I will watch more of it. It's quite nice. But yeah, those are my big suggestions there. Reservation Dogs and Good Place. On Max, there's a show called Somebody Somewhere. And again, it has to deal with some stuff. But in general, it's a very uplifting show about people taking care of each other. We really like that. And it just had its third season that's done. So it's actually resolving also. And I will say, as I said before, I think third season of Ted Lasso is the weakest. I still think it's really good. It's just weaker than the other two seasons. But I'm still very happy with it.
Yeah, I can't really think of any others off the top of my head like that.
Uplifting TV shows are kind of my jam. I want more of them.
Yeah.
We're still doing Acapulco, and we are enjoying that quite a bit. I think, have I talked about this? I suddenly remembered the existence of Bored to Death. It's a TV show. It was on HBO back when I didn't have HBO. And I was like, that's almost a good reason to get HBO. It was a comedy mystery starring Ted Danson, Jason Schwartzman, and Zach Galifianakis. And like Jason Schwartzman is an unlicensed private investigator and they like solve mysteries. And it got like three seasons. Huh. And I was like, I want to see that. And then I got HBO and then I never watched it. And then Max the other day tossed it up. So I think that's what I'm going to watch next.
Okay.
Because it sounds fun.
Cool.
But yeah, uplifting show is what I crave. There's not often enough of that. Joe Paratoxy is kind of uplifting. It's not bad or anything. It's nice. It's a nice show.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
It's not a mean show. Those are mostly it that I can think of.
Yeah, I can't really think of any. That's really sad. It's kind of, you'd think there'd be a whole slew of them. It's as popular as they are when they come along. But I mean, I suppose some people feel like a show doesn't really fit into that space, but still for them, or for example, Only Murders in the Building has some pretty sweet moments. I wouldn't put it in the same category as any of these, but that thing you're talking about where people take care of each other or where people, you know, learn important life lessons or whatever it is. Yeah, that's in there a little bit, And it can be pretty heartwarming, I guess you could say.
But also, if you want something uplifting that will also send you through the complete emotional ringer, watch Pose.
Yeah, you've often talked about that.
Pose is very sweet. Pose will also make you want to die. We had to stop Pose mid-second season because the number of funerals to episode ratio was way too high. But we did eventually do it, and it's an unbelievable show. And it is quite uplifting in a lot of ways. It just makes you go through a lot of stuff to get there. Yeah, that's a shame. Green Acres, that's pretty uplifting too. Dad's Army, pretty uplifting. Sorry, that was for Craig's benefit. Lovejoy, can you watch reruns of Lovejoy? I hear that's pretty uplifting. Young Ian McShane. All right, I think we got to do two emails because we don't got anything else to add to that, really. That's a shame.
Well, okay.
We don't got that many more people. You guys send us more emails. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com.
That was a weird way to say that. Okay. So this is from Azure Talon.
I've heard of him.
Most dearest hosts.
That's us.
It's a little long. I have recently started going to therapy, as I believe I've mentioned before. I wouldn't say I'm cheap per se, but I'm very value oriented. I don't mind paying more for a better product, and I certainly don't object to shelling out a little extra for an all you can eat deal. With that in mind, I'm trying to take the same approach to maximizing my mental health. So, is there a list of deep introspective questions I can write essay-style responses to, questions that might help me get straight to the heart of things? Essentially, I'd like to compile my personal blackmail dossier, hand it over to my therapist, and declare, here's the manual, fix me. A soon-to-be healthier, happier Azure Tell.
Well, this is going to be interesting.
Is it?
Well, you should have more to say about this than I do.
Sure, I've got questions I ask people.
Honestly, the very first thing that comes to my head is, wow, Azure Talon really doesn't understand what therapy's for.
Well, so I'm trying to think of what I would do if someone handed me something like that and it had that kind of information in it. I'm not going to say it wouldn't be helpful.
I mean, it
might not be, but it could be.
Early on in my stint with my current therapist, the first time around, she asked what my friends thought of me as a friend, and I didn't know. So I asked them all, and they submitted answers. It was very enlightening for me to see those answers, but it didn't play a long role in our therapy or anything. That wasn't like a building block for Azure Talon. Why are you in therapy?
Yeah.
The things are that have caused that, just talk with your therapist about those things. It is, although eventually people get to the point where they can manage without therapy, it is not a thing that gets fixed. You don't get cured. That's not a thing. It is, with exceptions of maybe very specific, very acute trauma, it's also what's going on is always a combination of things. Like, why did you go to therapy? Talk to your therapist about that stuff. If they're a decent therapist, that should get the ball rolling.
I should say that there was a subject line that said, how do I hack therapy? So, like, he is trying to kind of...
Okay, well, that makes it easier. You don't.
So, some questions, like, a therapist might ask would be, what would the world look like? What would your life look like? Or what will it look like when you think, okay, I can pause therapy, or I don't need to go to therapy. What would be different about your world, about yourself, that would make you stop and say, I can maybe pause therapy, or, you know, change therapy to every other week, or stop for a while? Because sometimes that helps people clarify what they want to happen, just like you just said, you know, figuring out what changes they want to make, or what, you know, gives them some direction.
We came at it a little backwards. My therapist in the earlier days used to frequently ask, why are you here? Which at first really hurt my feelings. And then I figured out she was specifically asking, like, what are you hoping to get out of this?
Like the philosopher. Why are you here? Also, questions that clarify a person's values. Because a lot of times they're, whatever they're in therapy for is because they don't feel like they're living according to their values. But sometimes that's because they don't even really know how to articulate those. So, you know, any question that does that, things like what do you want people to say about you at your funeral or when you're gone? What's a fate worse than death? You know, questions like that, these sort of, they're almost, they all are almost essay prompts kind of thing. Like they're almost creative.
At the end there, you got a little cocktail party icebreaker-y.
Yeah, they can sound like that. They can.
My
be
therapist
like that.
Has never asked me what was a fate I considered worse than death.
Well, you know, for some people, there isn't one. But for people who have an answer, they're very interesting.
And usually sometimes it involves sports.
And they can be very insightful. But you know, if what you mean by hacking, if what you mean is, how can I sort of, what are some things I can do outside of therapy to sort of, you know, get introspective, dig deep, so that when I come to therapy, I'm more prepared to answer deep questions or to give answers that are substantive and can help the therapist. You know, I think actually if any of us stop and think about it for just a little while, we can pretty much figure out what those things are, what our goals are, what we want out of life, how we want people to perceive us. It usually is some very, very, very basic stuff. And then, but then, you know, speaking to what Tony was saying, therapy is different for everybody, and not just because of their personalities, but because of whatever they're coming with. You know, some people really need help organizing their thoughts. Some people need to focus on behavior. Some people need to talk about their childhood or whatever it is. You know, Tony was talking about if someone has trauma. I mean, there's lots of different treatments for that. And which one you get depends on you. And, you know, sometimes what the trauma is also. So, yeah, there's, like Tony says, there's no real shortcuts or anything like that. But I do think a person can be more introspective and, you know, ask themselves the hard questions. I think that will help them prepare for a session.
Yeah. I mean, being open and honest with your therapist and open and honest with yourself is very important. Don't throw away anything out of hand without really considering it.
But you do a lot of
it does come up. My therapist and I are pretty much matched up these days, but every once in a while she'll be like, so do you think this could be related to this? And I'll stop and be like, no, I don't actually at all.
Yeah, right.
And she'll be like, okay. It doesn't usually, if she asks something, she's on to something. But every once in a while she does, and I stop. I'm like, oh, I hadn't even considered that. Let me think.
But you do a lot nothing. Does your therapist give you homework between sessions at all?
No, but that's because I give me homework.
Yeah, that was going to say. You
talk
do.
About coming up with questions or whatever. From the moment I leave my therapist, I am already thinking about what I'm going to tell my therapist next time,
right.
I am actively working on doing less of that, but at present, that No, that happens all the time. Yeah. Every experience I'm filtering through, what am I going to tell my therapist? And that's a terrible idea. But so if we assume for the moment that there are ways to make your therapy experience, I guess, quicker and more efficient, that implies one of a few things. One, that therapists in general, or therapists commonly, pad the shit out of their therapy. They spend a lot of time they didn't need to on stuff just so they can bill you better. If you think your therapist might be doing that, get a new therapist. Or people are bad at therapy. And if you prep beforehand and you know what you're doing and you're in the headspace, you will get much more efficient therapy than if you're just a dumb regular person who shows up. Okay. And if that's true, I guess I would ask your therapist what you can do to help. And then the third option is that therapy is hugely inefficient and there are tremendous efficiencies that can be built into it. And therapists just haven't figured out what those are yet. And you're hoping we know.
Well, that in that last one, therapists have figured out a few things. And those are usually the therapists who do give people homework, right? Mm. Workbooks even. You know, you know, fill out this.
I've had those with other therapists, just not with this therapist now, because I essentially.
But that's their answer to what you just said a second ago with efficiency, right?
Yeah. Like, well, or just knowing how to direct conversation. I'm sure there's a ton of things, but for Azure Talent to want us to give advice on how to make it more efficient implies that there's shit to do. Their therapist just doesn't know what it is.
Right, which of course is not true. Seems now it might mean that Azure Talon is the kind of person who would benefit from something like cognitive behavioral therapy that has that kind of homework or that kind of sort of organized approach where he can, you know, where he might actually have a written down treatment plan and written down goals for what the treatment's going to be. And he'll take stuff home to do. I mean, it maybe for him, that would be extremely beneficial. That's not beneficial for every client, but maybe his question is indicating what kind of therapist he should be working with.
Also, tell your therapist. Therapists get, I can't afford to keep doing this indefinitely.
Yep.
Or I'm just really eager to start that. This is me, like, cause I'm a therapy nerd. So I go in there just like really excited, like, what fucked up shit are we going to figure out about me now? So yeah, just whatever concerns you have or whatever goals you have, be they personal growth or finance management, if it relates to them, just tell your therapist. And I think your therapist might have some answers. And if your therapist gives you some shitty answers, that's maybe yet another sign that it's not a good therapist. There are lots of bad therapists. I have learned. I've had some, but I've also heard stories. And there are lots of bad therapists out there. And William's like three of them. He's like three different. They're all different bad, like in different ways.
It's crazy. You know, I was thinking about that.
Are your three different bad therapists?
No, what you're talking about bad therapists, right? So now sometimes a bad therapist is just a therapist that doesn't fit. They're not really bad. They were just bad for you.
No.
But people do run into therapists and the stories they tell are like, no, this person, I can't imagine this person being good for anybody. And it's surprising because, you know, having gone through the process recently and seeing what kinds of ways they have to sort of gatekeep that, it's a little, well, not really. I mean, of course, we all know that no matter how good a system you put in place and how good the gatekeeping is, there's going to be a few that get through, right?
Well, it only works if you follow it.
Well, right. But you can also game it. I mean, that's the problem with having any system like that is a person can game it and get through. But
yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, when you go through it yourself, you know, so first of all, and okay, so most program, and not just for counselors, but for social workers too, the psychologists, you can't get a master's degree and be a therapist. You've got to get a PhD, either a counseling psychology or a clinical psychology. But it almost works in a similar way. You've got to get that advanced degree, whatever it is. And that's a thing by itself. And if the other programs are like mine, I'm pretty sure they are, you're constantly reminded how the program is gatekeeping you. Like, we can decide if you go on, you know, even regardless of your grades. It's not about, oh, you got an A, so you go forward. No. There are residencies, there are things that you have to do in person, and you have to show you can perform the job, or even if you have a 4-point GPA, you're out. And that's just in the educational program. But then you have, everyone has a one or maybe even two standardized tests you have to pass that are notoriously difficult. It's not uncommon for people not to pass them the first time. Then you have to get state certified. Now, usually states will rubber stamp whatever the organization, like each type of counselor, like a social worker and me, and there's a overarching organization like the American Psychological Association or the American Counselors Association that set the standards. And usually they'll tell a state, this is what this person has to do. And if they've done those things, you can license them. So most states, they kind of rubber stamp at that point, but that's a lot of stuff that you have to do. And you do have to impress a significant number of other professionals to say, yeah, this person can do this. You can't just get a good grade somewhere, and you can't just pass a test. So it does make you wonder, like I said, you can game a system and everything, but the stuff that I had to do with other professionals and in the presence of other professionals, it seemed like that would have been hard to fake. So I don't really know how people get through that process and end up being bad.
But they definitely have to. Although, to be fair, most bad therapists I've had didn't seem damaging per se, just not helpful.
Well, and I've known this to happen where someone got through that process and they were, you know, good therapist or whatever, but then something happened to them in their life, you know, after that. And then they became a bad therapist. You know what I mean? Like something happened to them and now they're not good at it. So,
and occasionally just creep over time. If you're not double checking to make sure you're still maintaining your own standards, it can fade over time.
Well, but see, that's another thing.
All the safety nets you just described, who knows how long they've been in place. And maybe there are therapists out there who got certified before some of these things were in place.
Yes, that's true. But also, I think in all of them, you have to have continuing education credits every, you know, couple years or whatever, and renew your license. So that's another thing that's supposed to be a quality control.
And to be fair, this also applies to MDs and dentists and physical chiropractors, therapists.
Yeah.
So
all the same kind of stuff.
All these things are there. But yeah, I don't talk to your therapist about it. But I don't think there's a quicker way. And I think it is not, I personally don't think it is valuable or healthy to view your therapy experience as a thing to be, as a switch that something's wrong and then we're going to fix it and it's not wrong anymore.
But,
like, it's not the two states. It's a very gradual and continual and honestly cyclical kind of thing.
I think it'll be interesting to your therapist to know that you do think of it that way.
Yeah.
Right. And
that's the thing is sometimes you're like, oh, I don't want to tell my therapist something because I'll look like an idiot or a jerk or something, but it's like, no, they need to know.
Yeah.
The more they know, like, however it looks, they're not your friend. And that's a very, very important thing. I have to keep catching myself with my therapist because I keep wanting to basically go through what I've been up to. And I have to tell myself, like, some of this will be germane to my mental health. Some of it's not. And I try and keep it there. But then there's sometimes where I'm like, that was because I see her like monthly now. So sometimes it's like, well, some fucked up shit happened 3 weeks ago But I'm over it now, and I've got other things. Maybe I don't need to bother talking about that one. But, you know, it's me. I always want to make sure all the details are in there. But, congratulations, by the way, Azure Talon, for doing this. I think it's very important, and I think it's very beneficial. I do not intend to stop therapy. I am no longer at a point where I ever think I'm going to hit that point. And I'm at a point where I know if I do hit that point, I'm probably deluding myself. Because I did it before. And I was like, I'm great now. And then I was not great. And it just helps. It's, again, monthly. I probably won't make it more often than that. But just monthly, sometimes it's just a matter of, so here's how my life's going. Here's what I'm thinking I'm going to do about it. And here's what could come up that could change that. And then my therapist will be like, sounds like you got this pretty set. And I'll be like, feels pretty good for now. I'll see you in a month. But it takes an hour to do.
Yeah.
I come from a ridiculously big place of privilege in that I am operating with health insurance that essentially allows me to get as much of this as I want and not ever pay any extra for it. And I do realize a lot of health plans are like a limited number of sessions and things like that. And whenever you're doing therapy, always be very careful to find out what your insurance does or does not do.
All of that said, I think it's a, I do commend you for wanting to get the most out of your therapy and for wanting to, you know, be willing to do some work for that. But I think as Tony has said, your therapist is going to know best what that stuff is that you can do or that will help you.
Why are you here? What do you want to work on? What precipitated you actually doing it? I think, the whole what does it look like when you feel you don't need this anymore is a good one. But, I mean, just – think about the stuff you want to get done. Think about the stuff you get you discuss in therapy. I don't think there's any magic stuff that, like, if there is something that is going to make it more efficient for you in therapy and more effective for you in therapy, it's going to be incredibly specific to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which means we can't answer. So thanks for calling. We'll help you next time. Let's do our side quest.
Okay.
If I can get the box open. Here we go. By the time this airs, our anniversary will have passed.
Bye.
It's Monday is the thing. So our local bar and grill place that we have that's a couple blocks away that I take it to you one time where you ate all the fried foods.
Mm-hmm.
In February, we went there and they had a sign that said they were going to be closed on February 17th, but then opened the next day. And that was President's Day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, I know the owner of this place treats her employees pretty well. Like, she kept paying them when lockdown was happening. She's very good. But I'm like, giving them President's Day off. That's pretty impressive. And then we sat down and the server came over and I don't remember what prompted it, but I ended up saying something about how it must be nice to work at a place that gives you President's Day off. And he was like, what? And I said, we saw the sign. He said, oh, no. Apparently that's when they're doing their deep cleaning. And also their Christmas party, because they hadn't yet. It had nothing to do with President's Day. It was just coincidentally on President's Day that they closed the place down. Anyway, that was just something to kill time while I was shuffling the cards.
Three.
Well, I was going to say pick a number between 2 and 4. So, Christmas work. All right.
That was good.
We've had this one before.
We have?
I think so. Bring vegetation to your home world.
Yeah.
Get a new plant for your home.
Yeah, we have.
And as it was said by Groot, we are Groot.
And notice I don't have a plant here. I didn't do it.
We still got ours. My nephew has a bunch of pets. Of course, he also doesn't have any pets, which helps. We have one plant, and technically it is toxic to cats, and technically it is in a position where they could get at it, chew at it if they wanted to. They just never have. As the tendrils go longer, I try and sort of keep them so they're not tempting, but it's never been a thing. All right. If you'd like us to tell you you're doing therapy wrong, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com with all of your email related needs and give us some more, because you all did really good for a while, but we're kind of burning through them. So we need some more, because I'm really loving this era where we actually do emails, because I'm just sick to death of what he has to say. Also, if you want to comment on this, your therapy experiences, a lot of you out there have been to therapy. Maybe we're full of crap. I already assumed William was, but I also might be. So if we're full of crap, tell us how you supercharge your therapy with nitrous oxide canisters or whatever. That's what it is, right? In cars, isn't that the thing?
Nitro.
And my point is, do whippets every time you go to therapy. And also, yeah, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghead.com, and also keep listening, and we'll be back next week. I had a funny ending joke. I wonder what it was.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.